people frown upon earnout deal structures, but I'm a perfect example of how it can go really well. If you really believe in what you're doing and yourself, having somebody sort of set you up to succeed can be very, very lucrative.
I'm Jim Huffman, and this is If I Was Starting Today, a collection of conversations about half-baked startup ideas, growth tactics, and stories from founders, including my own journey as a business owner. All of the content is centered around one question: what would you do if you were starting today? Today, I speak with Alex Back of Couch.com. Yes, that's an impressive domain. And this episode is fun. Alex is super impressive. This is a guy that launched one company, Apartment2B, in around 2010. And it grew it to be a very impressive brand that actually ended up getting acquired, that allowed him to kind of do whatever he wanted to. And that next move was actually running it back and doing something very similar. He talks about the thought process of taking his skills from his first company and applying it to a new one, how to do it even better. He talks about why he spent high six figures to get the domain couch.com, what backfired with that idea, but what has actually worked out with doing that, with something he didn't even realize would be a bonus from it. He also talks about the early days of his first company and navigating a partnership, the highs and lows of what worked and what doesn't. He hits on some of the growth tactics he did with that first company that aren't sexy, but are what helped put him on the map. And he's very candid with where Couch.com is today and his plans for it. I love the business model and approach that he's doing as he gets inspiration from the not.com or even Wirecutter. This is a fun one. I enjoyed it and really hope you enjoyed this episode with Alex. If you're looking to start something, especially in the consumer space, and you're looking to work with a partner, I think you'll get a lot out of it. All right, Alex, first, do you mind introducing yourself and tell us what is Couch?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Alex Back. I'm the CEO and founder of Couch.com, and it is the place to find a couch. What we're doing here is taking something that's actually very difficult for consumers and trying to make it a little bit easier. We're solving a problem. The problem is no one knows where the hell to buy a couch. Where did you buy your last couch, Jim?
It's actually a sore subject. We bought a couch for our old place where we got a West Elm couch that has a pull-out mattress, performance velvet. It performs really well. But here's the problem. Couch sucks. It's really uncomfortable. It looks great. It can withstand any stain. But now we're in a new place and we hate sitting on it. So it's like, it's a problem. We're like, actually, this is you're pouring salt in the wound right now. We're in the market for a new couch for our space.
Great. And just to play on your own theme, if you were starting today, which would be your lead variables finding a new couch?
Well, let's do process of elimination. West Elm, Restoration Hardware, Pottery Barn, everyone has those couches. So how do I avoid those places? But really, it starts with my wife and inspiration for like design and what she wants to look to be. I care about, is the thing comfortable, right? So it's a really ugly collaborative process of oversharing links to things that, well, we've been in the market for a year and we still don't have a new couch because it's too painful.
That's funny. And yeah, I mean, just to riff on that, it sounds like you're looking for something unique that isn't something that everybody else has and something that's genuinely comfortable, and then something that is going to make you not argue with the other person involved. So, you know, those things are very, very important. But yeah, our goal is to guide people in the process by figuring out what is most important to them and starting there. Because often people, especially shopping on the internet or browsing at least, they're driven by these variables of just like whatever's out there, what it looks good to them. But in fact, it is other variables that are more important to you. And that is generally the case. So why not start with those variables and back our way into finding the perfect couch? We're like the match.com of couches.
It's so fascinating. Like, why couches? Because I want to get into inspiration for your thesis, because we were talking about beforehand of, you know, the Knot is this place for weddings, and you're kind of lead the tip of the spear that you're kind of making your bet on is the couch. Why the couch? Why is it this thoughtful thing? Why can't it just be like a chair or a dining table? Like, give me more thought on it, because I think I agree with you and the genius behind this, but what's the, give me the business school like explanation on why.
Okay, you got it. Well, everybody needs furniture, okay? So this is not something that only some people have. Generally speaking, most people have a couch. So there is demand. There's inherent demand. People need new couches. Couches don't last forever. So there's another, you know, sort of just very foundational business school element that there is demand.
You have a good TAM, a good total addressable market. People need to sit on couches.
It's like 100% of people. They need to sit and can't stand. No, but, you know, I've sold a lot of couches in my career. And I've really just firsthand witnessed how important they are to people. And it's really the centerpiece of a living room. And for many people, a centerpiece of their home. So it's not just an expensive purchase, because it is. And it's a high consideration purchase for that reason, but it's also high consideration purchase because simply it's very important to people. It's their home. It's something they use every single day. If you think about some of your favorite clothing and how often you actually wear it, maybe once a week at most, like once a month, a couch is something you use every single day. So people actually take a lot of time and energy and focus to make these decisions. And then when you add two people in the mix or more, it becomes even more difficult. You couple that with the fact that people have generally no idea where to buy furniture because, quite simply, they haven't bought furniture in a number of years. It's not something you buy every day like your favorite restaurant or even your favorite, you know, apparel retailer. So people need a lot of help, encouragement, and comfort, pun intended, to be able to buy a couch. And that's where I'm coming from with this whole concept. We want to make it easier. People need to be educated and they need a trusted resource, almost like a Wirecutter or Consumer Reports of the couch world, that is actually made up of furniture experts like myself who have a sense of how to guide people in this process, because it ain't easy.
Yeah, I love it. And so this is a fairly new company. Can you talk to us about like when you started it and like where you're at and like the size of the company, anything you can give so people just know where you're at right now?
Sure. So this is my second startup. I had another startup that we can talk about in a little bit if you wish. But right now, you know, we're just scratching the surface. I acquired this domain, couch.com, back in July of last year. It's now April.
And by the way, amazing domain. I was saying ahead of time, Alex, you nailed the domain. And he goes, wait, you mean I spend way too much money on it? Like, can we like talk about, like, because this is actually a big deal because I'm going through this right now with one potential opportunity. It's like how much to spend on a domain. And sometimes I think the name doesn't matter. Other times the name is everything. And I don't know what you paid for it. Maybe you can give us a teaser. I think whatever you paid, it was a good investment. But well, how are you feeling after making that purchase?
Scared. Nah, I'm just joking. I'm feeling really good about it. And, you know, there's two things. I'll get into the acquisition in a second, but just to answer that question, I'm feeling really good about it because what I've noticed, there's been some ups and downs as far as like where my expectations were and to where what the reality has been. My expectations were that Google and other search engines would be like, oh my God, couch.com. Well, this is clearly the place that we should send people if they're searching anything about a couch. Not the case. Not the case. It's still requiring as much hustle, content marketing, and SEO strategy as any other site, as couches.com or make a couch, find a couch, whatever. We're probably getting a little bit of credit for it, but not very, very little. So a little bit disappointing there. And also interesting and valuable information for other people considering, you know, single word domains. What has exceeded my expectations, however, is the X factor behind it. Having the domain couch.com has opened up pretty much every single door that I've wanted to open thus far. Mind you, I'm not, you know, trying to get meetings with Warren Buffett. I have, you know, people in the industry that will listen, that when you say you have couch.com, they want to understand what I'm doing. And I have a little clout in the industry from my former company. So it's really been great to have conversations with people, open doors, get a lot of feedback from retailers in the industry, manufacturers, logistics partners, everybody surrounding the furniture sphere is interested and excited by what I'm doing. So that's been great.
X Factor in couch.com. That I didn't think about that, but that makes so much sense. It's almost this like badge of credibility. I mean, I think your background in itself does it, but having that domain is another level. Can you give us a teaser of how much you spent on it?
Multiple six figures. Under $1 million.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's good to know. And you can always resell it, right? It's like buying art. It's an appreciating asset, hopefully.
I mean, that's literally what I thought I was just doing. If anybody's interested and you have an offer,
yeah.
I mean, like I said, tons of X Factor here, guys.
Yeah. I'll put it next to my NFTs on the wall. It'll be great. So, okay. So we're early days. You bought mycouch.com last year. And now it's like, let's build up organic traffic. Is that safe to say, like, where you're at right now?
That's literally it. So my first task was, okay, I bought this domain. Let me see what I have. Let me take this puppy for a test drive, essentially, right? A 9 month to a year test drive to see what it does. And, you know, I have tons of ideas and sort of go-to-market strategy concepts for couch.com. But a lot of it does depend, for better or for worse, what we can organically rank for, because that dramatically changes our financial model, right? For instance, one thing that we've seen traction with has been an unlock so far is brand reviews about brands in the industry. Now, working on the other side as a retailer in the furniture space, I knew the other players in this sphere. And I know what makes a good couch brand review and which doesn't. And I knew exactly who was actually producing traffic and revenue from the affiliate marketing side. So we essentially went after those sites and have been, you know, modeling our content after theirs. And that has hit a lot. So we're ranking very well for search terms surrounding a specific brand, right? Now, this is obviously a much lower funnel part of the process for a consumer. This isn't really the overall vision of couch.com to help people find the brands. In this case, they've already found them. But we're able to garner organic traffic and turn that into advertising revenue from our retail partners. So that is a particular focus of ours, whereas some of our educational articles like how to negotiate in a furniture store and things like that I think are extremely valuable are a little bit slower to gain traction. So those are going to take a little bit more time and massaging. But ultimately, you know, this type of business, which is a content and marketplace driven business where we are essentially an affiliate and an advertising platform for the furniture industry, we can't compete with the actual retailers in a paid marketing strategy. That's not something that we're able to do. So we have to see how much organic promise our domain and our content has before going, you know, to the Metas and the Googles of the world to start paying them for users.
Yeah, that's a good point for people listening. In a category like this, the exciting thing is high demand, huge addressable market, and kind of what Alex is alluding to. It also can be a knife fight when you're competing with Wayfair, or Amazon, or other brands that are competing for sectional couches and whatnot. So if you have an unfair advantage with organic traffic by having couch.com, that's really exciting. But it's like, can you see it through? And even go out through your website, you guys, from an SEO perspective, are putting on a masterclass. There's some good stuff here, like pet versus couch. I love some of the graphics I think you're doing from AI, like the brand's really fun. I'm assuming that's part of your superpower is organic traffic.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're set up to do really well. It was slow going for a number of months, right? So just to get the site indexed was difficult. And we do have a lot of AI-driven content there that we use mostly to aggregate information and organize ideas and thoughts around a specific concept. But there's AI content, there's AI images all over the site. So I think it took a little longer to get it, you know, tweaked enough and get it indexed for the first number of months. January 1st, we started seeing a lift, and then even as recently as 6 to 8 weeks ago, we started seeing a major spike. So I don't know if it was an algorithm update that benefited us in certain ways or just that certain things hit from an SEO perspective, but we're definitely on the right track now, and it's a very exciting and promising time.
That's really cool to see. And for people listening that are looking to grow their companies through SEO or organic traffic, as especially in like 2024, any like things for them to consider when going down that path? Because you're doing it well, and you're doing it in a competitive space. Like, anything that you could pass on to people to help them navigate that decision?
Yeah, I'm in a few networking groups with a lot of people in the content marketing space, which is one that, you know, I'm an e-com guy. Like this was not my forte ever. I've always been aware of it, but this hasn't been my life's focus until a year ago. So I'm still learning and just gaining as much education as I can. But some of the things I'm hearing are just surrounding AI content, there's been a lot of I read everything about it. There's been a lot of back and forth. I think the real players in the industry are saying to stay away from it as much as possible. And that's after sort of a lot of testing and vetting and things of that nature, like under 20 or 25% AI on a given article or on a website is, you know, where they feel the safe zone is right now. That's one thing. Another thing is just I can tell from personal experience that backlinks to your website are more important than ever. I've been on a sort of a world PR tour for couch.com, even though I'm not revenue positive nor selling anything yet. It's really part of the reason why we're talking now, just getting the word out there, just creating an ecosystem, pointing back a lot of attention to couch.com. has raised our domain rating from an 11 at the start of this year when we really started pushing for backlinks to a 40, which is a major, major lift and spike. And I celebrated it this last weekend a little bit too much.
That's awesome. I think the podcast tour is a great hack for building backlinks. So super smart. And one thing you said when we started talking was, you've done furniture before. You're a furniture expert. And people listening, it doesn't mean that like you're whittling wood in your garage making amazing side tables. You had a previous life of growing, scaling, and selling another startup, Apartment 2B. Can you kind of, and the other thing that's interesting is you've done well in this category and you've chosen after the exit to stay in the category. And this idea that I like to call running it back. So can you talk to us about like, you know, what was that ride like with your previous startup and what were like, what's the story there that led to the exit?
Yeah. So there was a lot. When we started Apartment 2B back in 2010, when there was really no independent retail presence online selling furniture. And just to give you context, like IKEA back at that time was not even retailing online. They were just using it as a sort of their website as an online catalog. This is the biggest furniture retailer in the world. So they hadn't figured it out yet either. There were some players emerging like Wayfair, which at the time was called CSN Stores. And they were sort of a conglomerate of websites like greatbarstools.com. and amazinglighting.net. Like this is how Wayfair, the biggest furniture retailer in America, started out. So just to give you those two anecdotes to give you a sense of the landscape at that time. So we hustled and we bootstrapped our company. We took on, you know, a little friends and family money, but very, very little, and just grew it organically. And luckily for us, me, my business partner and I, we barely knew what the hell we were doing. And luckily for us, there was very little competition at that time. So we had like 3 or 4 years before people started sprouting up who were well-funded after seeing some of the opportunity. So we had a head start and we exploited that head start for the entire time that we were with the company. So, you know, there's tons of stories and tons of little anecdotes within about what made us successful and little hustle nuggets. Like our, you know, we had this deal with Costco that we worked really hard and, We furnished a real world house for a couple of years, like
amazing.
Goofy stuff that, you know, maybe in other at other times in our business, we would have said no to these opportunities, but we hustled and then ended up selling the company to a large furniture retail chain. And then I stayed on for 4 years after that as a COO. And really at the end, it was just like, you know, it wasn't my company anymore. The business was sort of not on autopilot, but we were following a formula. It was less creative than it had been. And, you know, I was answering to all sorts of people and doing a lot of politicking. And I got burnt out from that and from all the customers and decided that it was time to go.
Damn. That's amazing. And was the goal when you started that to go for an exit, or was the goal like, hey, can we just make this a business?
We just wanted to make it a business. Before we started that company, I mean, we started when I was 26. I was singing on cruise ships. I was an actor and a singer. That's what I wanted to do with my life. And I was just looking for like an awesome income source that I could control that wasn't waiting tables or like getting some random office job.
Yeah.
So I was chasing sort of a lifestyle at that time and had no thoughts of selling this company at any moment. But yeah, you know, I think you grow a business, you sort of get in that mindset and you see other businesses around you raising money, selling, and you start, you know, the reality starts to sink in that that may be a path for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, so talk about you had a partner with Apartment2B. What worked with that partnership? Like, what was your superpower? What was your partner's superpower? What worked, or what did you have to work around?
That's a good question. There's a lot of stuff there. So my partner, Matt, and I, he's like my older brother. So we had a fairly well-established dynamic. We had been friends for a while already. And, you know, he was alpha dog and I was, you know, little brother character. But we respected each other's strengths and were able to work together really, really well. So he was basically sort of the creative and vision guy. As creative as I felt that I was, like I had to relinquish that to him. We had sort of some initial power struggles, I feel like, surrounding the creative vision of the brand and like where we were going with things. And I decided that like, if I'm going to do this, I need to be creative in other ways. And he was essentially sort of like the, you know, the visionary, the talker. He was the one who was getting us amazing opportunities. And he's incredible at that. He's just like an energy guy. You put him in a room, you put him on a call, he'll get you excited about whatever it is. And I just sort of became the operational guy. I dealt with all of the employees. I, you know, managed customer service. I did a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that was necessary to run the business. But I found creative ways to infuse my personality and sort of my easygoing nature into it. I tried to make operations fun.
That's so fascinating because I look at couch.com right now and there's so much fun personality. You're in the videos, you're the face of it. You're the kind of visionary for this one. And so in those early days, it's like, hey, I have the ability to be this, but like, this is where my partner's really excelling and thriving. So you know what? I'll play this role of kind of, if we're doing EOS, entrepreneur operating system, like a visionary and integrator, because I have some other founder friends that they can kind of flex accordingly, where some people can't flex and they always have to be in a role. Like, do you think that made you more well-rounded? Or did it just make you realize, okay, I can do this for now, but the long-term game is I want to be on that side of it?
Great, great question. I mean, for me, I think it's important for everybody to really have a good sense of what their goals are. So in that company, was my goal to perform, or was I using it as a vehicle to support my lifestyle so I could perform in other ways? So I could do like a singing gig every now and then, which I did throughout the first number of years of running this company. But it can be a tough pill to swallow to have to flex over to something else. I think it's easier said than done. And here's a story for you. So we were lucky enough to be on Shark Tank back, I think, 2012, 2013. Our episode never aired. But we were there, like we prepped. It was like an incredible opportunity for a goofy startup that was in business for 2 years. And, you know, Matt was pretty adamant that he was going to be the one doing the pitch and that it wasn't going to be a duo.
Yeah.
And he got us the opportunity. He hustled his way into it. And I remember, you know, going through that, like, I mean, like, I'm literally, I feel like I'm a natural born performer. Like,
you literally are a performer.
I literally, it's what I was doing for the previous, you know, 8 to 10 years. So that was really tough. But you know what? I trusted him to do it. He was in there. He pitched awesome. The Sharks loved him. They talked for 45 minutes. And at the end of the day, there wasn't like a good fit for a deal. And there was also no drama. So it didn't go get on the episode.
A world-class actor could have caused some drama. So maybe that was your opportunity.
I could have stormed through the door like, dude, you started this already? I'm supposed to be here. And that would have been an episode for the ages.
That's interesting because, yeah, there's all those lists of like why businesses don't work. It's like run out of cash, founder dispute. And usually those are like the two big ones. And founder dispute is huge. But the fact that you all could kind of have real conversations and understand the role, that is huge because it clearly led to a really good outcome and exit. Can you talk through, this is going well, you're finding your lane, you're early, you talked about like having that head start and running with it. Timing is the most important thing with business. As much as we want to like give ourselves a pat on the back, it's like timing, if you can get that right, solves a lot of problems. But it also leads to like, when did you realize, okay, we should sell this and now is the right time? What was the thought process there?
Yeah, so we got approached by someone in a company in the home furnishing space a year prior to our acquisition, a different company. And it started getting us thinking about it. And that was so valuable because even though that deal never happened, it got us thinking about the why behind it all. And like, what are we looking for? Why would we sell? Why would we not sell? Are we actually trying to sell this company? And so we started like really thinking about it. And one thing that occurred to us is that we didn't want to have this business forever. Like we weren't trying to create a legacy, you know, lifestyle generational business for our children or whatever else. So we sort of recognized that we did want to come to a conclusion that it would be a tremendous accomplishment, regardless of financial outcome, to have started and sold a business. So that deal fell through. And then the following year, when the eventual suitor that did acquire us reached out to us, we were sort of ready to have those conversations again because we had identified sort of at least the foundational aspects of, you know, how we felt about the idea of selling. So a lot of it was just really, as I said, like, do we want to take this exit? Like, do we literally, quite literally, want to exit this company or do we want to hang on to it for a long time? And both of us agreed that we wanted to exit it sooner than later. So much so that after the acquisition, my partner, Matt, stayed on for only 1 year afterwards. And I stayed on for an additional 3 after he left. So, you know, we were just looking to sort of shift out of that lifestyle and that business and to feel a sense of accomplishment that is really sort of unmatched in business.
Yeah, right. It's like there's only a few outcomes for businesses, right? And an acquisition is better than some of the alternatives. So super impressive. Are there things you did in preparation for the sale to ensure you got the best valuation? Because it's kind of nice to have those conversations early on. We're like, oh, wait, if we do this, this, and this better, this will make us more attractive to a potential buyer. Are there like any advice you could share to people that are thinking of going down that path?
Well, I think we didn't really do anything, you know, too specific. Our business was already doing really well and we were profitable at that time. But I would say, you know, to make sure that, you know, I think profitability is extremely important in many businesses. It just depends, right? If you can show that you're in obvious growth mode and you have a path to profitability at some point, I think it's probably just as good. But if you're not in hyper growth mode and you haven't raised money and, you know, this is mostly a bootstrapped company and you really have to show some promise. So if you're really thinking about an acquisition at some point in the near future, I would focus on efficiency and profitability because as much as, you know, we read all these stories as entrepreneurs about you know, companies getting bought at multiples of revenue or evaluated at multiples of revenue based on potential. Most small businesses need to be profitable to get moved. So yeah, I think that's, I would just, if there was one thing I would say, focus on efficiency and profitability. If you're gearing up for a small business, smaller business sale is very important.
That makes sense because evaluations derive from cash flow or EBITDA. And, you know, that makes it very, very interesting to someone buying. And I'm always interested just because, like, we have a growth agency. We're always interested in how people think through growth. As you look back on the growth of Apartment2B, and even now with Couch, like, can you share any, like, inflection points in growth that really helped? If it's something you did from, like, cracking the code on SEO and focusing on one thing, or it's like, oh, actually, partnerships or ads, or, like, what are some of those big inflection points that got you to the next level with growth?
There are so many. My mind is, like, racing right now to figure out which ones to highlight as the most important. I'll give a few anecdotes. I think I have three. One, year one, we realized that, you know, nobody really knew who we were. And we also didn't have a real, like, paid advertising budget at the time. Mind you, the landscape of e-commerce was a lot more nebulous at that time. It wasn't, like, obvious that you advertise on Google and you advertise on Meta and then whatever else, you know, you sort of work into your mix.
Yeah.
We did a ton of promotional stuff just to get ourselves on the map. This was at the height of Groupon's popularity.
Yes.
And there were other ancillary players that were doing similar kinds of perks like that. And even though these were sort of lost leaders for us in the end, I mean, we were, you know, it was break even at best. We were using their platform to get the word out about our business, to create a buzz, to create links, to have something to talk about. So I think a lot of brands are, like, very averse to being overly promotional in the beginning. My advice is people forget that you were overly promotional. Like, you can get past that. People feel like, if I go on sale super, super crazy, then I'm never going to be able to come back from that. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. It depends on the industry you're in, I guess. But, you know, especially in furniture where people are buying from you once every 5 years, 10 years, you're not going to remember what you did 5 years ago. So if you need to use promotions to get on the map, go for it. Number two, I would say partnerships. You mentioned partnerships are extremely important. Using other brands and brand names and brand clout to elevate your own brand is extremely valuable and can be an extremely cost-effective way to raise awareness about your brand or business. So we started working with Costco back when we had first started Apartment2B. And what we would do is we would go into Southern California, where we're based, Southern California Costcos, and do roadshow events. So we bring in, like, 6 to 8 couches, put them on the floor of Costco next to the diapers and the hummus, and we would sell our couches to the people for a limited time, 10-day events at a really, like, heavily discounted prices. We did pick up some margin, so it was a profitable enterprise for us. But ultimately, like, it was free advertising. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people walk through a Costco every day. So even if that was break-even business and gave Costco as much, you know, margin as they wanted us to give them, it was valuable because it got our name out there. It raised awareness about our brand and ultimately drove business. And then, you know, the final thing I'll say about growth, I think, one big thing is, you know, certain things that are not that sexy. I mean, these are the two examples I gave are both not that sexy. Groupon and Costco, these aren't brands like a hot startup wants to align with in the furniture and lifestyle space. But we have a ton of success doing co-branded giveaways.
Yeah.
You know, people look down upon giveaways. I don't enter giveaways. I do judge people who do enter giveaways, to be quite honest. It's like, What do you think you're going to win out of the 40,000 people and they're going to receive all these emails from all these different partners? But I will tell you that it works. And having access to first-party data these days is so valuable. You bring in a certain amount of people, you bring in 10,000 people on a giveaway, you may end up with 1,000, 2,000 after you scrub them through your list, send them a little bit of content. it may resonate with them. These are all people just like us. So they are potential users. And I think that has been extremely successful for us in my former business and in growing our presence with Couch.com currently. We have a nice, healthy email list because of that.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah, I think it's easy to like kind of frown upon giveaways, but we see the same thing. And so as much as I cringe when I have to do them, it's like, crap, these things still work. So yeah.
Right, they do.
Well, thank you for those shares. Those are really good. So you have this exit. Kind of talk through like where you have this exit, like where are you at? Like, because there's this book Dan Andrews wrote of like before the exit on what to think through, where it's like, what type of wealth are you going into? Is this FD money or is it maybe later money? You know, it's like, what is it? Because you're at a point where you have an exit and then it's like, what do we do next? And you kind of then run it back. But not asking you to tell the number, but like, what does this do to change you financially? And then how are you thinking through that next option? Because you clearly enjoyed the learnings that you had and you wanted to build upon it.
Yeah. So we sold our business in year 7 or 8, and this is a bootstrap business. So, you know, we never achieved like any major scale to that point. And our deal structure was such that it incentivized growth over the next 4 years. So that's part of the reason I stayed on for those 4 years to really maximize that. We were extremely successful and grew the business about 6 to 7x during that time.
Wow.
During that 4 year period. So we were able to, you know, maximize the potential of our deal and made a lot more money than we thought. So, you know, people frown upon earnout deal structures, but I'm a perfect example of how it can go really well. If you really believe in what you're doing and yourself, having somebody sort of set you up to succeed can be very, very lucrative. Then again, not FU money, but it definitely took me to the next level of being a person and afforded me, you know, certain luxuries in life that have been very valuable to me, more from a philosophical perspective, to really help me understand like, okay, I've had now, you know, 5 super nice cars, you know, own a house, kids are in private school, but what do I really want? Do I want to keep going with this? Am I going for like the Gulfstream, or am I looking for experiences in life? And what defines my happiness? So getting some of these things has been super valuable to me to really define my life. And maybe you can relate, like when you have a taste of some of the good life, so to speak, I think it helps you really understand what's most important to you. So that's been great, but it also gave me, you know, the funds to start my next startup, and that's where I'm at right now. And it's so far it's been fully self-funded.
Yeah, no, that's exciting, man. Did you take any time off? Did you like YOLO at all? Were you like wearing gold suits for a few weeks? Like anything exciting?
I took, you know, I gave myself 6 months to take a sabbatical. I listened. Not a big like long form reader, so I listened to every single business book and podcast that I could find on Audible and,
yeah,
and Spotify and things, and educated myself. I took a fairly deliberate approach. I like that stuff. I like learning.
Yeah.
Took a deliberate approach to learning about things that I just hadn't spent a lot of time on, the stock market.
And with
different aspects of business and fundraising and things that I just needed to educate myself on. But I also traveled a lot. You know, took my mom to Egypt. I went on a solo trip to Norway. And yeah, that's where I found a lot of inspiration just being by myself and really thinking about what I wanted next. And that's literally where I conceived of Couch.com.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, having that space and being in a different environment sometimes just makes you think differently. At least that's what I tell myself. And it's hard to get that when you're in the day-to-day of being an entrepreneur, running things, much less throwing kids all into the mix. It's hard to actually think and have any sort of clarity. I struggle with that. It's like, when can I think and be strategic as opposed to reacting to things?
It's so hard to not get pigeonholed into your business. I mean, I had 40 employees. It's like the communication, their lives, their families, the ecosystem that I had created in my former business was all consuming. Then I had my own family, 2 young kids. And, you know, it's so hard to step outside of your everyday life and you know, I'm not saying I mastered this because I never really did, but if you see an angle to give yourself some balance or some time off, like half a day on Friday to just think and just go on like a long walk or hike or something like that, I think that stuff is so, so valuable. I mean, people say that all the time, but I really believe it's true.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're playing the long game as a business owner, you have to, or you'll just pass out. I mean, this is awesome. Well, one last question I like to ask is, what is the nicest thing anyone's done for you in your professional career?
The nicest thing anyone's done was probably early on at Apartment 2B. We had gotten in this deal with Costco, and things were going fairly well, but we were struggling, and we also had a cash flow problem. And at the time, my partner and I, like our credit wasn't fantastic. Like we were fairly maxed out. And we just asked a friend, hey, can you help out? And we had a friend loan us 30 grand interest free for as long as we needed. We paid him back. And thank you, Berko, if you're listening. Once again, you know I love you forever for this. But that was the nicest thing, like the nicest single thing, selfless, 100% selfless. He wanted nothing out of it that anyone's done. But yeah, I mean, a lot of favors along the way. You get a lot of help just by asking for it. I think that's maybe the larger concept in play here in this anecdote.
Yeah. How do you ask for help? Like with, you know, like, how do you do that?
You know, I think, and everybody, because I don't like to inconvenience people. So I've been very sheepish about asking for help for a long time.
Only.
But in the last year, I've been asking for things left and right. And I find that probably 80 to 90% of the time, people just want to help.
Yeah.
They don't want anything in return. And I know that because I like to be helpful. Like I'm consulting for a company pro bono right now, just because it makes me feel good and to flex my, you know, e-commerce muscles or whatever.
Yeah.
And be helpful to people. And I think that's something we undervalue as business people, that, you know, it's not all about money and success. Like people enjoy personal connections. They like to feel helpful. Just like I enjoy talking to you and creating the best podcast that we can with the best content. You know, I don't have really much stake in the game. I just want to be as helpful and engaging as possible.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And that's so true. I think for the most part, people are good and want to be helpful, right? If you come at it from a genuine perspective, as opposed to like, gimme, gimme, gimme. So very cool. Well, Alex, where should we point people if they want to learn more about you or more about couch.com? I think the answer is obvious, but where can we send people?
Well, you're right, Jim. It is obvious. It's couch.com. Couch.com has about 4,000 videos of me on it. So if you want...
How'd you make
I'm just joking. No, but we're pushing 100. So, and it took a long time. Spent the whole summer and fall creating a lot of content. A lot of interesting videos with me on it. But yes, I'm all over couch.com now. As we expand our ecosystem, there'll be more people involved. You can find me there. And my email address is alex@couch.com. I'm very communicative person. So if anybody has an opportunity, they want to buy my domain or, you know, anything else, please hit me up there. I'd love to hear from you.
No, it's an impressive site. People should check it out. Check out the site map and the structure. There's a lot of good stuff going on from an organic perspective. And as Alex is looking at models similar to the Knot for Weddings, I think this is the first of many things that he'll be doing, which is, I love people that like have a plan that's pretty strategic and just see them execute on it. So well done. Extremely thoughtful, man.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Well, Alex, thanks for the time and look forward to following along as you grow this thing.
All right. And good luck behind your couch, by the way.
Yeah, I will be on the site. You need to get I need one of those giveaways to win a free test.
You got it.
I'll give a few plugs. First, I send a weekly newsletter each Thursday featuring 5 articles or tools that have helped me. You can sign up for these weekly updates at jimwhuffman.com. Second, for anyone running a startup, if you need help growing your business, check out Growth Hit. Growth Hit serves as your external growth team. After working with over 100 startups and generating $250 million in sales for clients, Growth Hit has perfected a growth process that's hell-bent on driving ROI through rapid experiments. Plus, you'll get to work with yours truly. So if you want to work with a team that's worked with startups that have been funded by Andreessen Horowitz or featured on Shark Tank, then check out growthhit.com. And finally, I wrote a book called The Growth Marketer's Playbook that takes everything I've learned as a growth mentor for venture-backed startups, and I've distilled it down to 140 pages. So instead of hiring a growth team, save yourself some money, get the book, and you can just do it yourself. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'd love to hear feedback. I'm on Twitter at Jim W. Huffman. Are you a business owner in desperate need of talent, but you have issues finding good people? Or worse, you find the talent, but then they want you to pay them double what you have budgeted. Yeah, I know the feeling. This is where Remotely Talents can help. Imagine having a personal HR team that finds you A-plus talent, and here's the best part. It costs you 40 or even 80% less than US employees. It's magic. So let's say you need help with setting up your social ads, your Google ads, email marketing, website development, customer service. Their team sources the top Ukrainian talent for you, and they deliver three top vetted candidates straight to your inbox. It's a one-time payment, and best yet, they give you a 60-day guarantee to ensure you're happy. Hey, if it doesn't work out, they'll find and replace the talent for free. Even better, 3% of all sales go to the Children's Hospital in Ukraine. At Growth Hit, our agency, we've hired 4 people from Ukraine. I am blown away by the level of work we're getting. So whether you need a virtual assistant or a creative director, give this a try. Go to remotelytalents.com right now and start a conversation. See if they can help you. You really have nothing to lose.